Blog Talk Radio.
Now, from the world's most famous beach, from where beach racing began, it's the Legends of Racing radio show. Live from Racing's North Turn Beach Bar and Grill in Ponce Inlet, Florida. The Legends of Racing radio show. And your host, Buzz McKim.
Thank you, everybody. Wow, show 22 already. 22, Fireball Roberts number. How about that? Anyway, we have a special show today. If our guest shows up,
I'm not sure.
What? What's the problem?
We got to stop it.
Why?
You're out of uniform.
Oh.
You didn't wear the special shirt.
Oh, so what happens then?
So you got to go to the center chair.
Oh, geez.
For another reason, too.
Why is that?
Ladies and gentlemen, today we're here celebrating Buzz McKim's birthday. Yeah.
Thank you. I love to thank my mother for giving me the opportunity to have birthdays. I really appreciate that. I'm a little tired this morning. We just got in from New Jersey, and we brought Mom's 95-year-old sister back. We didn't get in till late, but then they decided to go bar hopping, and I had to bail them out about 3:30 this morning.
I found out if you go up to the table and pass a $5 bill to her, she'll tell you her secret formula for what formaldehyde she uses. All right? For $10, his mother Alma will tell you, too. So. Now, I agreed to do this show when I found out that, first of all, it was Buzz's birthday. Second of all, it's show number 22, and you know I love Fireball.
Yes. Do you know where 22 came from?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Red Vote.
But you know where he got it from.
No, he got it from...
Come on, here we go.
The driver.
Nope.
Well, came from where?
Well, I'll tell you.
I figured you would.
Now, when Red Byron was driving for Red Vote,
yep.
Right? Red Vote was born on September 22nd. So it was Red Vote coming up with the 22 who passed it down to Red Byron who passed it down to Fireball. So there you go. How about that?
We're going to have a lot of fun today. It's fun facts.
Yeah, fun at my expense.
That's right. And yeah. Buzz was... W-U-Z, Buzz Was?
Buzz Was.
Oh, yeah, we're going to do that.
Okay.
We're
going
to have some fun. First of all, first question off the top, the name Buzz.
Yeah.
Does anybody know, besides his mother and his aunt and some of the relatives, what is Buzz McKim's real name?
Oh.
Albert! It's Albert James McKim.
Bad Elvis.
And people often wonder where in the world the name Buzz came from. Now, there's pictures on the BuzzMcKim.com website which show you when you were younger, you started like buzz cuts.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it happened even earlier than that. Yeah, I was fortunate enough and privileged enough to be named after my grandfather. I was the first male born after his passing, and he was Albert Claus. So, I got the Albert thing, and then my folks were sitting around not long after I was born, and they're wondering, what are we going to call this thing? You know, we don't like Al, we don't like Bert, you know, it just doesn't fit. So my dad was reading the Sunday Funnies one Sunday morning, and there was a comic strip back then, Buzz Sawyer, and that's where I got the name from. They said, hey, Buzz, that's why I only have one Z, because everybody wants to give me two, I don't deserve two. And then there was a terrible... The entire Z crop in South America was wiped out in 1951. Z's were very, very scarce that year.
Oh,
so anyway, okay.
Only Buzz. Now, we're going to find out a lot of interesting things about him. He's an author. He's brought out some books. He's edited pictures and books. He's an artist. And we're going to find out a lot of facts about him. And that's the, by the way, these facts came from his mom, Alma. So they are authenticated.
Yeah, but they're all going to be nice and friendly. You want to get to the dirt, don't you?
These are going to be good ones.
Okay.
And they'll be the setup for the other ones, the alternative answers.
Okay.
How about that?
Okay.
All right. Today is his birthday. Actually, yesterday, technically, October 4th. He's born in 1951. I was so pleased to find out that you were younger than me.
Oh, really?
I really was. So okay. Only by a year.
All righty.
Yeah, that's the way it was. Locally, he's a graduate of Mainland High School in the year 1969. How about that? Go Bucks. Mm-hmm. And that's part of it. There we go. We got Bucks in the audience. There you go.
Yes,
and
sir.
And next year would be your 50th.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, you talk that's about right. Birthdays. That's
yeah.
Going to be something else.
Yeah.
So let's talk about his pregnant mother. Oh, no. She's not pregnant now.
No.
I mean, she's
no.
90.
Yeah.
Okay.
But she smoked a lot back then, so that
that
says a lot.
Boom, boom.
What happened here?
But anyway, I understand that you got your start in racing because she used to go to the races in the Wayback Machine in,
yes.
in Morristown, New Jersey. And you used to kick a lot whenever the race cars would go around the track, so they just knew you'd really be involved in racing.
Oh, yeah.
As far back as then.
Yeah, in fact, I was almost born at a racetrack. She was overdue, and she went racing, and you know, a guy said to my dad, well, aren't you afraid she's going to have the kid right here at the track? And he said, well, they got ambulances. They can just scoot her over to the hospital. It'll be all right.
There you go. And but he was not born at the track. There is a rumor, but no, that did not happen. Anyway, maybe if we would have figured out Buzz's future history, he might have been named like AJ or something like that.
Oh, that would
right?
have been cool, yeah.
AJ McKim.
Yeah, or if my dad was reading Little Abner that day, it would have been Abner McKim.
Abner, oh, yeah. Could have been. Yeah. You just never know. Anyway, at the tender young age of 3, and yes, he was. At one point, he was 3. his aunt gave him his first race car.
Yeah.
There's a picture of it up front here. It's a yellow, bright yellow pedal car there. So how about that? It was a number 3.
That's right.
Dale Earnhardt number.
That's right. And
you had number 3 before Dale Earnhardt.
Yeah, see? And I let him have it. And you notice it's an open-wheel car. It's not a stock car.
Oh, yeah, yeah. See? And let's see. While living in Pennsylvania, at the age of 8, his dad, Bob, bought him a quarter midget, which he raced at Phoenixville Raceway. And he just kind of chased the other cars around.
There you go.
He would become the pace car after on the yellow flag.
That was good practice for my stock car career.
There you go.
As a chaser.
All right. The family moved to South Florida down in the Miami area in 1961. Pretty significant because Hialeah Racetrack down there featured some racers down there by the name of?
Allison.
Allison. And recently you just interviewed him. So
mm-hmm.
that must have been fun to go in the Wayback Machine and yeah. interview them like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it was. And it was interesting to see how competitive the Allison brothers were even back then. They put each other in the wall if they had to win a race. They said that, you know, when the green flag dropped, there were no brothers out there. They were just out there to do what they could. So, yeah, I learned a lot. Actually, when we lived in Pennsylvania, just before we moved to Florida, we'd go to the old Hatfield Speedway and the Andretti brothers race there.
Ah.
So we got to see, you know, a lot of greats from the early days.
Funny how the brothers always had started with an A, you know?
Yeah, I never thought about that.
Yeah, really.
That's profound.
You also met someone else, became a friend of the family through your dad, Randy Tissot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Randy was great.
And Randy had a crew and a race car and brought it to Daytona.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that was in February of 1965.
That's right. We moved into our house in South Daytona on February 1st, and about February 3rd, Randy and the whole crew moved into our house. And they stayed there for the most of the month. And it was interesting. We had a little patio out next to the house. And Randy and a couple of the guys slept in a little bitty travel trailer. And I remember one night, about 2 in the morning, we heard this commotion. And it seemed Randy had quite a bit of gas that night. And he was giving the other crew members a really bad time, you know.
Wow.
But Randy was excellent. You know, one of the real, real superstars of South Florida. And then went on to drive in some cup races. And a lot of late model sportsmen. It's a super guy. In fact, his daughter, Nicole, is engaged to Jerry Cook's son. Jerry Cook, former NASCAR official, Hall of Famer,
small
and
6-time
modified
yeah.
champ. Yeah.
Well, that kind of prompted you and Dad and the family to move to Daytona in February of 1965.
Right.
And 2 days after moving in, Randy
mm-hmm.
and the crew came here for Daytona.
Yep.
And the rest, they say, for you, Buzz, was history.
Oh, yes.
You really got you involved in racing. Mm-hmm. But we talked off air before we started, and there was an important component in all this.
Mm-hmm.
Now I have talked about your your dad, Bob, and Alma.
Mm-hmm.
There was another person that was a very important component, and that was your brother, Bobby.
Yeah, Bobby was remarkable. He was far better looking than I was, and funny, a tremendous cartoonist, an artist, and a writer. He was writing 3 books at the time of his death, and he died at the age of 15. We were involved in an auto accident out in front of Marvin Panch's house outside of Port Orange.
You were going to a Richie Panch birthday party.
That's right. Well, actually, Richie and Marvin both had the same birthday.
Oh, okay.
And Marvin had helped a bunch of us in high school on a social studies project. So we went out there as a thank you and to help him celebrate. And Bobby lost his life in that accident. But he was really the guy who got this whole history thing going. He started it, and then I felt obliged to continue it. So, you know, everything that I've accomplished, I really owe to him getting the ball rolling. He had a book on Marshall Teague he was writing. He had a book on Fireball and also a book on early midget racing that he was writing at the time of his death. And just a week or so before the accident, he had gotten a note from his English teacher that he had been, and he was only in the 9th grade, he had gotten a deal to where that coming summer of 1969, he could have taken college-level courses in journalism and English and all that. So that's probably where he would have ended up, though, because the writing was really what he loved to do.
How about that? And he was actually your younger brother by a couple of years.
Yeah, he was about 2.5 years younger than I was.
But very advanced in that. So back in the day here, there was a local track, the DeLand Raceway. And it was, I think it was a borrow pit for something, and they dug dirt out of it, and they left this big clay bottom with a lake in the middle of it, and it became a very popular raceway over here on the East Coast.
Oh, yeah, they called it the Drive-In Racetrack, and it actually started out as a pond, and Wally McGregor, that owned the property, talked about, oh, I think I'll drain that pond, and I'll make a rodeo out of the grounds. And a fella in town, Buck Holder, who was associated with NASCAR in some capacity, said, he says, we got enough rodeos around here. You got to make a racetrack out of it. So it turned into once it was pumped out, it was a perfect quarter mile bowl. And it was a barrel of monkeys. There were no guardrails. You had chicken wire fence between you and the spectators. Everybody drove up to the fence and brought their coolers, you know, the original tailgating. And it was just some of the craziest racing that I've ever seen. Then if it wasn't wacky enough, they tried figure eight racing. And that was even crazier. One night, one of the guys flipped, and the roll bars beat him out of the car. So you know, our tech inspector might not have been on his toes, you know. But it was really, really amazing. We cut our teeth there.
Well, you used to race there, and down here, down front, it was raced.
No, it was driving.
Oh, driving.
I never raced.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Yeah. Well, somebody had to be the pace car, so very slow pace. But
yes.
Down front here is the race car, the number 21 race car there.
Yeah, that's one of them.
So trivia question, what was the highest place you ever placed in a race on dirt at DeLand Raceway or elsewhere?
I might have gotten a second at DeLand, but it seems like something was always goofing us up. Like at the time, my dad owned a gas station up in Holly Hill, and he thought I put gas in the car, and I thought he put gas in the car, so we ran out of gas, and I was leading.
Of course he was leading,
Look, Mom, leading. And then another time, we put an unvented gas cap on the gas tank, and it caused a suction and cut the – it was a mess. I mean, we were like, you know, F troop of racing. And if you notice, on the left front fender there, it says Museum of Speed. Now, that was a museum that was on Route 1 in South Daytona. It was founded by Bill Tuthill, who was the first secretary of NASCAR and co-founder of NASCAR with Bill France. And anyway, he took pity upon us, and he said we could put his name on the car. Now, my dad was the announcer back then, so I got the butt of all his stupid jokes. And he said, that 21 down there, he said, look at that, you know, sponsored by Museum of Speed. He said, as good as he's running, he ought to be sponsored by the Museum of Slow. And at the time, I thought driving race cars would help me get girls. I was still in high school. That didn't help. You know, and then my self-esteem was crushed because of his defamatory remarks. Anyway, I survived, though.
So let's talk about the race where you finished second.
Yeah.
This was a race where there was only 2 cars. Who won?
Now, I'll tell you what.
They still ran the feature, didn't they?
Yes. No, I was a designated chaser, actually. I would chase the other cars. And then the one night we finished next to last, we were protested because they thought there must be something wrong with that car. We like to mess with them, too. I remember we had to put the cubic inches on the hood. And one time we lettered the car up and we put the cubic inches on there in Roman numerals. And they couldn't figure out what that was all about. They thought there had to be something funny to it.
That was too far over their head.
Yeah.
Well, just to go back again, Bobby had a very special memorial race that he ran.
Mm-hmm.
A good friend of ours from Holly Hill, once again, Larry Flynn,
that's
won
right.
that race. So.
Yeah, yeah, Larry Flynn was tremendous. We loved Larry. And he was so controversial. He was kind of like the Gary Ballou of his day.
That's right.
And
flying Irishman.
Yeah, a flying Irishman. And he was a guy who brought, especially local racing here, to a higher level. Everybody was running just junk. Larry was the first guy to run a quick change rear, floater hubs, you know, Grand National roll cage, fuel cells. And, you know, he really, really classed up everybody's racing around here. So we owe him a lot. But he won the first one. Actually, I think he won the first two. There were three all the year. Then Curtis Crawfish Crider won the final Bobby McKim Memorial. So,
and that was another local driver. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And he ran cup races for years and years and raced in England. And boy, there's stories about Curtis.
A lot of them, that's for sure.
Yeah.
That brought you into mainstream of racing. You began to meet a lot of people
mm-hmm.
around racing. Your the thing that you were doing with your painting really brought you forward into Benny Parsons, David Pearson's race cars. You actually mm-hmm. painted mm-hmm. the numbers. No, there were no decals.
Mm-hmm.
You actually painted the cars, the numbers and names and everything, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, in fact, the only decals back in those days were Richard Petty's numbers. You know, they were on slick decals, but everything else was hand-painted. And I had gotten into the sign business because we had our old clunker, and I couldn't afford to have a sign painter do it. So I thought, well, I could do it myself, and it took about a week.
Yeah.
And I finally got it done, and then over the years I've done, a couple thousand race cars, I guess. But one of them was Benny Parsons in 1974. He was the reigning champion, and he had just gotten the sponsorship from the Kings Row Fireplace Shops. So he needed lettering done. So a friend of mine worked for a company that handled the Kings Row publicity. And so he hooked me up with Benny and L.G. DeWitt, his car owner, and he had me do all the lettering on the car. And then also one of the deals that this fellow was involved in was Purolator. So I got to hook up with Wood Brothers and design paint jobs for Benny when he won the Daytona 500, and also for David Pearson when he won the Daytona 500, when they had that big wreck right there at the end of the race where he and Petty got smashed up. So I was kind of working my way up to the big time.
Ladies and gentlemen, Buzz McKim. Oh. And that's just getting started. We have a lot more to come. And when we get back, some questions are going to be coming from people that have been emailing me all week long. So we'll get into those. Right now it's time for commercial announcements, the people that help put this show together.
The caution flag is out. Time for a break. We'll be right back with the Legends of Racing radio show. Welcome to Homewood Suites by Hilton in Daytona Beach. You're right in the middle of all the action. Daytona International Speedway, the airport, One Daytona, Florida's newest entertainment and retail destination, and of course, the world's most famous beach. You'll love our newly remodeled 1 and 2 bedroom suites, along with our popular King Studios. You won't need your full kitchen, as Homewood Suites Daytona serves up complimentary breakfast and evening social. It's like home away from home. Go to homewooddaytona.com for Homewood Suites by Hilton in Daytona Beach. We're back from where it all began. Racing's original North Turn Beach Bar and Grill. The Legends of Racing radio show continues with your host, Buzz McKim.
I said I'd do this show if I could be Buzz for a day. That's not true.
Will you take over my bills?
Really? See? Somebody just notified me. They said, who is this guy talking with Buzz? Who is it all about? You know? And my name is Roland Villa, and I'm part of the Motor Racing Heritage group that Buzz is an important part of. Done a lot of artwork for us for the birthplace of speed. So you've really gone back to the beginning of racing.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that more in a minute. We have to put these headphones on right now. We have a telephone call coming in. Okay, caller, you're live on the air.
Well, hello there. This is Buzz's favorite oldest sister.
Oh, really? How about that? Wow, my sister Pat, she was a trophy queen when she was about 7 or 8 years old, I guess.
Now, I want to verify this, Pat. His name is Buzz, spelled with one Z, but your name is Pat, spelled with two T's. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. Yes,
see?
It is. Yeah. Yes, it is.
She was trying to forge her own identity.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. She was part of the groupies, you know, the posse that traveled around with us from place to place. Yeah.
I saw a picture in the audience where you were at the Land Raceway and some pictures in the Wayback when you were still in single digits, Pat.
Yes. Yes. Our dad announced, our mom worked in the concession stand for very little money because we pretty much ate it all night. And I think she owed money at the end of the night. And my sister and I would sit on the stoop right there and watch Buzz drive around the track. They used to say that you knew the race was over when Buzz would cross the finish line, pretty much.
Made for a really late race.
But
that's why they called him late model.
Late models. But, we grew up at all the tracks and, followed Buzz around. We just found a picture at my aunt's house of his 57 sedan delivery that used to tow the 57 Chevy sedan delivery that used to tow the car. And, it's just a great, great way to grow up. And Bobby and Buzz would go down to the Museum of Speed, and Bobby loved to wax the Bluebird. And, we all knew Mr. Tuthill and could get in for free. That was really cool. And Buzz was always in the file cabinet looking through stuff and talking stories and everything. And then I had the pleasure in 1998 to work at the archives with Buzz during the 50th anniversary of NASCAR and just got to meet the fantastic people, Herb Thomas and Tim Flock and Jack White, and just everybody came in, and Buzz would sit there and would hand them their files that they didn't know existed and would say, tell us stories about these pictures. And to see Glenn Wood sitting there and just going through all these pictures. And I really think that Buzz helped create the idea of the Hall of Fame, because when he was in the archives, the last thing he would say when he got off the phone was, if there's anything else you need, call me. If there's anything I can do for you, call me. And really kind of put the history on the map when we were over there, I think. I feel that way. It was wonderful. He's the best big brother ever, ever, ever.
All right.
Thank you, Pat. The check's in the mail.
Thank you. Love you, Buzz.
Matter of fact, Pat, I became Buzz's best friend when he was at the archives down on Blue Road.
Oh, yeah, Blue Road, yeah.
And he used to be able to take us in there. And I agree with you, at least locally here, the archives would have never been open to the public if it wasn't for Buzz and his organizational skills to get us in there.
Yeah, and if Mr. Franz...
Oh, no, Prince, I remember.
That's what, fired.
Yeah.
That's part of it.
No, it was an awesome experience.
Pat, tell me one embarrassing story about Buzz McKim while we got him captive here.
Oh, my God. There's so many. I mean, we know the ones about our brother Bobby coming out with the underwear on his hat on his head saying he was going to make a pizza pie, like an Italian.
We weren't very smart, but we had a lot of fun.
We always had a lot of fun. We just always had a lot of fun. I mean, Buzz is one of those people that you will never hear anyone say anything bad about him. He is the most fantastic person ever. And, you know, he drove half the time of the 2,700 miles we just did. So I can't say anything bad about him.
There you go. Thank you, Pat, for sharing in his birthday. And we appreciate your calling.
Thank you.
On the Legends
really
of Race.
Really glad that you guys are doing this.
All right.
Okay. Love you, Buzz.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You're doing good.
Well,
yeah, that was a nice surprise.
Nice,
thank you.
Yeah, nice to have a sister that still has good things to say about you.
Yeah, it took quite a bit of money to get that one in place.
That's for sure. Let's talk about some books that you have written, because in the middle of all these stories and the things that you were involved in, you began to collect a lot of information like your brother Bobby did.
Mm-hmm.
And you wrote one book that I meant to bring it. The 24 hours of Daytona 24 hours.
Yes, yeah.
And you wrote that with J.J. O'Malley.
Yeah, J.J. did most of the writing. I was the photo editor, and you know, going through the archives, coming through, you know, what stories tell the best, or what pictures tell the best stories, what has the most impact, what's, you know, diversity in the cars and also in the race itself. So, you know, what they do is, you know, these publishers would come to the archives to like get the inside stories to kind of take their idea and kind of take it to the next level if we could help them with information or images or anything
right.
like that. Yeah.
So that was a lot of fun doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And that led to another book that is absolutely hands down the most fabulous book written about NASCAR, because
oh,
it has history. It has statistics. It has things in it that only people could dream about. It was called The NASCAR Vault.
Yes.
And what was so fabulous about it, you like it too, didn't you? Yeah. It was a great book. Great book.
Thank you, thank you.
And what it had in the book was things like NASCAR Bill France's 1938 Indianapolis 500 pit pass. I mean, where else are you going to see that? It had actual copies of it inside this book. It also had the NASCAR's first race report, the 48 rules and specifications brochure, which was a piece of paper folded over.
Yeah, that was a rule book.
That's
yeah,
about
right.
it, yeah.
Yep.
Boy, have we changed from there.
Oh,
huh?
My.
We got rules for rules for rules,
yes,
right?
Yes, we do.
And speaking of that, folks, we got some new NASCAR rules this particular year. We're going to talk about that towards the end of the show. I want to get your introspection on that.
Sure.
All right, also inside this book, a race day program from the legendary Bowman Gray Stadium, an invitation from former President Jimmy Carter to the first ever White House banquet, even a ticket to Earnhardt's first 500 victory.
That's right.
So these are things that were actually in the archives,
mm-hmm.
and you managed to be able to copy them and put them into a storybook format.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a publisher out of Seattle that did a whole series of these kind of books. They went to Disney and did a book about Disney and went through their archives. They did one on, they did one on Elvis. They did one on John Lennon. And they wanted to do one on NASCAR. So they came to us and said, you know, what can you do for us? So we said, oh, we'll fix you up. Yeah.
And also Branham was an author.
Yeah.
Kay Branham.
Herb Branham was our, he and I co-wrote it. We worked really well together, and we came out with a really nice product. We're very, very proud of it. It's been out of print for probably 10 years, but you can still find them once in a while.
One of the things you're known for has to do with your artwork, and especially the specializing in NASCAR. Matter of fact, ladies and gentlemen, behind us, we have the very first number one painting right up here. That's from July of 1966. That's his very first painting. We'll put it down here so you can come by and see it, but that got you started.
Yeah, I thought this is kind of neat. Nobody was doing any kind of race car art, so that picture was on the front page of the paper, Richard Petty going into the wall with Earl Bomber running into him. And, you know, it's kind of weird. That looks almost like the Earnhardt accident, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
wow.
Earnhardt. Yeah. Crazy.
Probably in the same spot.
Yeah.
But that got you started in the artwork. Now, I got to get on you about something.
Uh-oh.
You promised us that once you retired, you'd have more time for painting.
Mm-hmm.
That you were going to increase your archives of paintings, because he does sell these paintings. He's got several that are on his website, buzzmckim.com, 1Z, and you've got it on there with some of these race things. I know I've through the years, I've passed all kinds of emails to you about people wanting to get the art prints and things like that.
That's right.
So are you going to be able to get back into the painting?
Well, I do have several prints that I still have to market, but I'd like to go get into painting. Just have to work on my significant other there. Yeah. She'll let me break away from working on the house.
Uh-huh.
No,
no. Uh-huh.
No, she's good.
We're talking about his wife, Kim.
Nope. Gwen.
Oh, Gwen.
That's my daughter, Kim,
I just made that up.
That's fine.
Oh, that's the other woman? Oh, okay.
No, we'll get back to it.
Did you really say Kim?
Yeah, we'll get back to the artwork soon, I promise.
We will. Okay, right now we're halfway through this show. The questions are going to come fast and furious. So stick around. We're here at the North Turn Restaurant. So happy to be here. There's still time to come down. Still time to find out a lot more about racing through Buzz McKim. We'll be right back after these messages.
The caution flag is out. Time for a break. We'll be right back with the Legends of Racing radio show. Racing's original North Turn is our broadcast headquarters. If you're looking for a good drink, great entertainment, and the best in food, they're right on the beach at Racing's Original North Turn. Rhonda and Walt invite you to come on down to dinner tonight. Here are a couple of testimonials. These are actual testimonials from people who have enjoyed the North Turn. Been there many times, always great food and drinks, great location on the beach. And another, what a great experience. It's my new favorite restaurant in the Daytona Beach area, Racing's Original North Turn on South Atlantic Avenue. That's A1A in Ponce Inlet, about 3.2 miles south of the Dunlawton Bridge and A1A intersection. It's Racing's Original North Turn, a restaurant, museum, bar, gift shop, live music. That's Racing's North Turn. Racing's North Turn has been voted by you top 10 beach bar 7 years in a row. Next year, they're going for top five. We're back from where it all began, Racing's Original North Turn Beach Bar and Grill. The Legends of Racing radio show continues with your host, Buzz McKim.
So I bet, Buzz McKim, that you've already told your wife, honey, make sure that I have my shirt every time I go to my show.
I do.
There you go.
Yeah, and she's awesome, and our daughter did it this week, but then I was getting ready to put the shirt on, and I had a lot of people say, wait a minute, you're the guest. You don't need a shirt. So if I get in trouble from Mike Multane, our grand poobah, it's their fault.
All right. Yeah. We miss Mike today. Yeah. Mike, I hope you're having fun wherever you're at. We need you back. We have a question from the audience.
Yes.
I was really surprised when I walked in. I mean, the hat says it all.
You betcha.
You got to know that.
Yeah.
So we have David. No, we don't. We have Josh Bailey from Maryville, Tennessee, or East Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a question for the Buzzster?
Yes, sir. Big Smoke Music Band, I was wondering, what was the first car that had this famous black and white colors on?
Yeah, you know, he had a 56 Chevy at Darlington that was black with a gold number 3. And then it looks like it would be probably 57 with the Chevy. And then...
is that Paul Goldsmith?
Yeah, Goldsmith, okay. Right. And then, of course, the Pontiac in 58 with Goldsmith that won the race. And then, you know, the real traditional, you know, gold on top, black on the bottom in 59 with Fireball with the Pontiac. And I just thought that was the coolest looking car, that color combination. I had a 67 Camaro painted black and gold, just like Smokey's. And I still am going to do another car, a black and gold. I don't know what it's going to be yet. But I love your hat.
Yeah. And, of course, this is show number 22, which was Fireball Roberts and Smokey Unit getting hooked up. So how about that?
Well, you know, Josh went to the hat maker that did those hats for Smokey and had that hat made. Terrific.
And how it's made with a hat maker, I understand that he's a 300-pound man and all he did was just sit on a cowboy hat. Yeah, that's about right. Okay. Thank you, Josh.
Appreciate it, Josh.
Question.
Yeah. Speaking of headwear... this is the helmet I bought back in 1967 for $20. I figured, you know, wasn't too much to pay. My head was worth it.
Where did you get that helmet?
Well, I bought that from Sam Packard, who had the local Yamaha dealership.
And he was also on the roof of the Streamline.
Yes, he was
helping bring NASCAR into light.
That's right. He was one of the founders of NASCAR. And ironically, his daughter Rhoda is here today.
Oh, really?
With her high school class having a reunion lunch. So.
Well,
I thought that was
kind of
nice.
Wow.
Cool.
That's something else. did you ever get on your head in that helmet or whatever?
I was never
going to bangs.
Yeah, that's getting in and out of the car.
Oh, don't you?
Yeah. I never went fast enough to get on my head.
You never?
Yeah.
How about that?
No, sir.
All right. You mentioned a minute ago that you had a question that came up to you.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Pat came over. And it's interesting. The company that did the work on the NASCAR ball, what it is, it's a story. NASCAR, but then there were plastic sleeves where all these archives were taken out of the archive department, reproduced, put that, you know, they put them in the sleeves. I mean, on the first race report, there's rust from the staple on the page. I mean, you cannot tell it from the original, unless on the back you see in little letters says reproduction. Well, when I was up at the NASCAR Hall of Fame, about once a year we'd have somebody call and said, hey, I got all these really cool NASCAR documents that I want to either donate or sell. And they start, you know, telling them, tell me what they were. And I said, oh, wait a minute. That came out of a book. No, these are real. I said, no, they came out of a book. Yeah, so it happened a lot.
Now, something that a lot of people don't know about Buzz, being the artist that he is, he kind of got this from his brother Bobby. He says his brother Bobby was better at this.
He was.
But believe it or not, back in his teens and moving forward, Buzz McKim was a cartoonist. Would you believe that he used to do cartoons for comic books like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
Yep. That's right.
Anybody remember Ren and Stimpy?
Yeah.
You know, he used to do that. So how in the world did you get into that?
Well, I was hungry.
Half pen will travel.
That's right. Anything for a buck. Now, I had a friend in DeLand that had an animation studio.
Yeah.
Excuse me. But we did work for Universal, Disney.
Well, that's interesting. But you put a pin to anything if the buck is the bucket.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. That's for sure. There was a story about there was a school presentation, and it occurred when McKim invited anyone from the audience to come forward and draw a Ninja Turtle.
That's right.
And so one young man immediately came forward and came confidently towards the easel to accept this challenge. Tell us about that.
I forget what you're talking about.
You see, it's his birthday.
That's right.
He's celebrating the D word.
Ooh.
Okay. Whoa. Okay. This young man came forward in about 2 minutes, drew a Ninja Turtle,
mm-hmm.
and after you picked your jaw up off the floor, you never did that again. And that's right.
Yeah, he did it better than I did.
Yeah.
Rotten kid.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's the thing about racing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is kind of a segue that. We're talking about racing, how the young became the old and the old became used to seeing the young again come
mm-hmm.
along and race during that time.
Absolutely.
So in your days and your time, you've seen a tremendous change in racing.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. When you think about the cars that they raced in the 60s and very few injuries or deaths. Well, you had a time there, you know, with the fire and they remedied that. But racing by nature was always reactive and not proactive. It's been very reactive about the last two decades. But, boy, the way things have changed. And at the time, you always think you're at the cutting edge. This is as good as it gets. This is as safe as it gets. This is as fast as we're ever going to go. You know, the tires can never possibly get any better. But somehow they find that the technology, you know, just increases. And people have new ideas and new products are coming out and new materials. And, you know, it's a never-ending evolution, if you will. So it'll be interesting to see where we are 5 years from now.
Well, we're going to talk about the rules for 2019 coming up here shortly.
Mm-hmm.
So the changes happen. Now, during this time, you're at the NASCAR archives. You're learning about the history, keeping up with the current stories. What was the most colorful character that ever came in to the archives for Buzz McKim?
God,
I mean, I know there's many. I've heard a lot of the stories.
Yep, yep.
Colorful. One that stands out.
Yeah. I would have to say, and he wasn't in the archives per se. Well, in the archives, it was not in the Hall of Fame, but had to be Tim Flock. Because he would do anything. He and his brother, Bo, with Fonny, they would do anything to have fun. You know, a monkey in the car, Bermuda shorts and knee socks,
Jocko
wingtips.
Flocko.
Yeah, all that sort of thing. But, yeah, you never knew what the Flocks were coming up with
you
next.
Got it. So you're involved with the archives.
Yes.
And then we went through a time where we were going to have a NASCAR Hall of Fame. And boy, did we try hard to get it here in Daytona Beach.
We did, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
And because we sort of knew that if it went anywhere else, guess who's going to have to go to the NASCAR Hall of Fame? Because who knows more about what's going on at the NASCAR Hall of Fame? But in the year 2007, yes, he was announced as being the head archivist at the NASCAR Hall of Fame. That was really something else.
Hey, thank you, guys. Right place at the right time. And a little dumb luck involved, too.
Well, dumb luck, but a little dumb luck. We do have someone from the NASCAR Hall of Fame calling in right now.
Really?
This is someone you used to work with. Caller, go ahead and announce yourself.
Hey, Buzz, it's Kevin Fleischer from the NASCAR Hall of Fame. How you doing, buddy?
Whoa, he was my grand poobah up there.
What did you do up there, Kevin?
So I'm the exhibits director, so, you know, everything I knew about exhibits I learned, you know, the hard way through work and all that other stuff. But everything I learned about NASCAR, I learned by sitting next to this gentleman here. And, you know, I have him and much more to owe to Mr. Buzz McKim there.
Oh, man, I appreciate that. He's got the coolest family and the neatest kids, too, this guy here, Kevin. And you know what's really neat about that? Their exhibit that's on the main floor now is all about the 1948 season, the first year of NASCAR, and it was recently named one of the top 22 museum exhibits in the entire nation. So you guys are doing awesome work up there.
Well, thanks, really Buzz. You know, I mean, I think that one of the great things is Buzz really set a high bar for really all of us. You know, I mean, I think, you know, he talked about dumb luck. It's not dumb luck. You know, he was the right guy for the right job. You know, he brought a level of humor to the job. He brought a level of expertise to the job, and he brought a Rolodex that goes back to, forget about 1948. His Rolodex goes back so far that probably Lincoln is on a speed dial, and he could call and he could call Lincoln and say, "What do you think about the 1948 season?" And somehow he would get a quote out of the guy. So, you know, Buzz knows every rock and every what's under every rock and every artifact and the cars and the people
rock.
And then he can tell you some sort of weird, strange story that nobody ever even knows about what's under the rock. So, you know, we were lucky to have him while he was here, and sure do miss him.
Man, I appreciate that, Kevin. You guys mean the world to me, and I sure miss you every day. And we'll get back up there for a visit one day, okay?
Yeah, and, you know, we also miss, you know, your dietary habits. You know, we miss your sweet tooth and your sweet tooth and your Hardee's tooth and your Dairy Queen tooth. And, you know, I was joking with another staff person right before I called. I said, "What's the funniest thing about Buzz?" And he said, "How about his expense reports?" And I'll be like, "Yeah, you know what? I knew when Buzz was out and about town, because I wasn't approving, you know, some staff you worry is they're going to get a $100 steak dinner, and I'm approving, you know, $5.50 at a drive-thru in Hardee's with a NASCAR Hall of Fame inductee." And, you know, so
we
missed that.
We?
We're all a bit healthier. We certainly did. And, you know, you mean the world to us. Even though you're down there, you mean the world to us up here. And happy birthday and many happy more returns.
Yeah, thank you very much, sir. I do appreciate that.
Hey, Kevin. Right. Kevin, I'm
yes,
sorry.
Sir.
You cannot have him back. All right.
You know,
got him back. We're keeping him.
Well, you know what, and I think Gwen likes him down there, and, you know, we couldn't be happier for him in this new phase in his life, and as much as we miss him, we know that he's having a good time down there, and you know what, he's still doing right by the sport that we all love, and he's doing right by his family, and that's really the perfect place for him to be.
Oh, appreciate it. Hey, and call me if you need anything, okay?
Of course.
You know we will.
Okay.
He's the first number in your Rolodex, we know. Hey, Kevin.
Always.
He's the best.
Yes,
yeah, with the NASCAR Hall of Fame. Thank you, Kevin. We appreciate your call.
My pleasure. Everybody have a great day.
We couldn't let that go by.
No, he was terrific.
How many times were you asked for tickets to the NASCAR Hall of Fame over a period of time? Everybody, I know Buzz, and Buzz knows everybody. So
Yeah. Well, I had to do some tap dancing.
Yeah.
Sometimes I can give him a discount.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I can tell the lady at the desk that this is my cousin, you know, if he's a really good friend. But, yeah, I think anytime you're in a position like that, you're going to get hit up occasionally.
Yeah,
so,
it happens that way. Okay. You mentioned it a little bit. So we're going to talk about something else racing.
My dietary
habits? No, we're going to.
Yeah.
We know what they are. We just have to look.
Oh,
you don't wear stripes. Like, okay. Anyway. Right, Gwen? Okay. We are going to take a break in just a minute, but I'm going to really give you relief here because the question is going to be, what one item are you most proud of that you received for display at the NASCAR Hall of Fame?
You got it.
1 minute.
Okay, right now?
Do it now.
Okay. It had to be the jacket that Judy Judge Fireball Roberts' fiance loaned us. It was an Autolite jacket that he got when he went over to the Ford team in 63. And the last time he wore it was in April of 64, not long before his accident. And everything was still in the pockets from the last time he wore it. A half a pack of Juicy Fruit gum and his pit credential signed and a cigarette lighter and things like that. And it was
precious.
Yes, and it was a
priceless.
Absolute time capsule. And she said after he died, she put everything away except for that jacket, and she hung it in the closet, and she would take it down from time to time, and she'd hold it, and she could still smell him in the jacket. And when she lost that scent of his, she put it in the box, and it hadn't been out of the box for well over 40 years when we found it. And I just thought that was such a poignant piece.
Ladies and gentlemen, Buzz McKim's birthday celebration. Thank you all for being here at the North Turn Restaurant. Also, I'd like to thank the Cree Web Design folks who really help us out here. We really enjoy that. All of our sponsors are ever so important to us. So when we mention their names, tell them that you heard about this show right here on the Legends of Racing Radio Show. Back right after these commercial messages.
The caution flag is out. Time for a break. We'll be right back with the Legends of Racing Radio Show. At Beach Boys Embroidery and Tees, it's all about making you happy. Beach Boys Embroidery can customize your athletic golf apparel, caps, hats, badges, buttons, magnets, backpacks, bags, totes, clocks, watches, oh, and of course, T-shirts. Sure, they're at 2033 South Ridgewood Avenue in South Daytona, and they're waiting for you to call now, 386-255-5880. Beach Boys Embroidery and Tees. We're back from where it all began. Racing's original North Turn Beach Bar and Grill. The Legends of Racing Radio Show continues with your host, Buzz McKim.
Yeah! Thank you. So how does it feel to be in the hot seat for once?
It's hot.
It's hot.
Yeah, it's fun.
A little bit different.
Yep. Extremely embarrassed about talking about it.
But this is your life, Buzz. You've been involved in this for a long time. That's why we love you so much. You said you had a quick story for us.
Yeah, I want to tell you what the highlight of my life in racing is. This goes way back. Marvin Panch's daughter, she and I were wandering around the pits around 1971 at Daytona during Speed Week, and she knew everybody. And she sees Pedro Rodriguez, you know, the great, I mean, fantastic, like one of the top five road racers in the whole world. She went up there and gave him a big hug. Oh, Pedro, I shook his hand, and we stood there and talked for a little while, and we went on our way. So the next day, she calls. She said, "You want to hear something funny?" I said, "What's that?" She said, "I talked to Pedro this morning on the phone, and he asked me if you were my boyfriend." And I said, "No." He said, "I didn't think so." He said, "You can do better than that." So that's my highlight. Man, I was insulted by a great race driver.
That's really good. Let's talk about moments at the racetrack.
Mm-hmm.
You've done commentary before. You've done shows before. Real common question. We used to do this in the Cold Tailpipe Society. You remember that.
Right.
That the News Journal boys used to take us to.
Yep.
So what is or was the most embarrassing moment you had in motorsports?
Me?
You.
Just showing up.
Just showing up. No, you've asked the wrong question at the wrong time to the wrong person at some time. And it can relate back to the Hall of Fame if you want to.
Yeah. Yeah, there have been times when I've misspoken, you know, and in an interview or something. Then I go back and go, oh, my God, they're going to think I'm a total moron. You know, but, hey, we're just human, right? And sometimes you get your wires crossed, and that's always really embarrassing. But if I really thought about it, I could come up with some pretty good stuff, but I think we're going to run out of time for us.
Yeah. Do you remember Kyle Petty's most embarrassing moment in motorsports?
No. What was that?
You remember this.
Kyle Petty?
I hate to tell your story, but what it was is Kyle Petty was in an accident at a track, and the ambulance crew came up to him and gathered him up and said, well, you're going to have to go to the hospital. So he ended up going to the hospital in his racing uniform. And they took him out, and they had him in the emergency room, and they were examining him, and they said, well, Mr. Petty, we're going to have to cut off your racing suit. And he says, well, you can do that if you want. But he says, I'm not wearing anything underneath it. Oh, the nurses were laughing. And the doctor said, yeah, go ahead, take off his uniform. And I don't know if you remember this finish. He wasn't wearing anything under that racing uniform.
Well, 1 year they were having the big press, you know, preseason press deal here at the Speedway. And they had all the drivers coming in, and then they were like, I don't know, like little booths and stuff that they could change into their uniform. And my boss came over. He says, hey, Jeff Gordon's coming in. He said, I want you to make sure that, you know, nobody gets near his booth while he's in there because he's going commando today.
There you go.
That's all we needed to know.
Hey, we're going to take another break here in just a minute, but I was just told an announcement. Buzz McKim's artwork is featured in the Curtis Turner Museum. This is up
Roanoke, Virginia.
You got it.
Yeah.
And they have just held over the show an extra week. It's that popular.
Wow.
So
wonderful.
Congratulations.
Thank you. That's wonderful.
Really, really good.
Great.
Folks, we're going to be back in just a minute. Don't go anywhere.
The caution flag is out. Time for a break. We'll be right back with the Legends of Racing Radio Show. Welcome to the Janet Hale Foundation website. With this website, we hope to broaden our reach to find someone like you to help us on our journey. Janet's journey started 40 years ago to ensure that all children had a toy under the tree at Christmas. Today, thousands of toys and clothing are donated for underprivileged kids. We need your help to continue our journey. Tour this website and find the Donate Now button. A small gesture can make a big difference in a young life. We need your help. Visit us on Facebook, Janet Hale Foundation, or call 386-256-0752. We're back from where it all began. Racing's original North Turn Beach Bar and Grill. The Legends of Racing Radio Show continues with your host, Buzz McKim.
So there is another little story about the NASCAR Hall of Fame. Whenever they first opened it up, Fox TV came and did an interview with Buzz because he was identified as the person putting together the exhibits, and he had a famous quote from that. And the famous quote was, well, it had better be right the first time, because if not, you'll look like a schmo. So that told me that whenever they went up there to visit the first time, they had T-shirts. They said, I'm here with a schmo.
That's right. You know, if you don't get it right, you have no credibility in a facility like that. But I love artifacts. I love anything old. Even married an older woman. I'm sorry, dear. Anyway, right in the back there, we have Diana Dedley, who is the daughter of NASCAR's first photographer, T. Taylor Warren.
Hey,
she's
awesome. Really?
Yeah. And she is wearing T. Taylor's original pure hat.
Unreal.
That goes back probably to 1952.
Priceless, yes.
And I'm so tickled that she brought it today because, boy, if that hat could talk, it would really be something.
I'm still trying to find a pure blue satin jacket. You know, I want it like the old drivers.
Yeah, I know where you can get a few, but you probably have to go to jail.
Uh-oh. You have an old key from the NASCAR Museum Hall of Fame.
Right.
All right. Hey, my name is Roland Villa. I'm just the fill-in host so that we can roast Buzz McKim. He's the regular host, and he has some shows coming up. These are your shows coming up.
Oh, man, I'll tell you what. This is going to be fantastic. Next Friday, we have Carter Stokes, and you're going to say, who? Well, it's a young fella. He's probably, 18, 19 years old? 21. Okay. All righty. And he is going to be a big, big deal. He's associated with Mike Skinner Racing Team, Ben Kennedy, who is one of the Francis Racing Team. And also, he is a Richard Childress driver development protege. So you're going to be hearing big, big things out of him. And we're going to talk about how he got to where he is. You know, how did he get the attention for somebody to pay attention to him? It's going to be a really, really neat deal. And then a couple of more shows, one on the 19th and on the 26th, our good friend, the Flash, Bill Watson, our photographer, he came up with these guys. And it's amazing. Did you know that Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University here in Daytona has an all-female Baja off-road race team? So they're going to be here with their car on the 19th, and talking about how, you know, what they can take from what they learned at Embry-Riddle through aviation and aeronautical, you know, technology and how they apply it to their Baja car. And then the next week, we have a, I think it's a co-ed, Formula SAE race team from Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University. And, you know, the technology that's coming out of the aeronautical industry is very much applied to racing today. There's a lot of crossover there. So you have a lot of these folks who are looking to get involved in certain forms of racing, and they learn their stuff through Embry-Riddle. So we're lucky to have them in town. So not only will the teams be here, but their cars are going to be here. It's going to be something very, very unusual. And I just can't wait to find out about this stuff.
So the month of October, well booked. We look forward to those shows for sure.
That's right.
Big announcement on Tuesday. This is a segue from the young to the old,
old
to the young.
Yes, sir.
It has to do, NASCAR officials announced some new rules in NASCAR. Now, what's amazing to me is they're going to do away with the restrictor plates at Daytona and Talladega.
That's crazy.
But what they're going to do is add aero to the cars, more openings, different things to kind of slow them down.
Right.
At Daytona, they're going to have a restrictor plate for the 2019, and then at the next the July 4th race, and I still call it July 4th.
Yeah. Yep.
And then in the other Talladega races, they're going to not have a restrictor plate. They could have a tapered spacer. It just depends on some things. They've been doing this over 2 years. How many people here watch the All-Star race and all that close fender-to-fender racing?
Right, right.
Now,
good stuff.
That's right. Now, but there was some complaints about it. They said, oh, this manufacturer is this. And the cars were going slower. I couldn't tell they were going any slower on TV.
No.
Right?
I mean,
the cars were doing just fine.
Yep.
And what they did is they came up with that tapered spacer to lower the horsepower from 750 to 550.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they also are going to use a larger front splitter, a larger tail fin, and a belly pan underneath the radiator. All these things are aerodynamically supposed to make the cars more equal. By round of applause, how many people agree with that?
Yeah.
How many people
agree with that?
Okay.
Absolutely.
But Buzz McKim, you deal with the history. We now have things a lot different. We have segment racing. We have, is that what it's called, segment? Or?
Yeah. Sure.
And we have
Stage racing.
Yeah. Thank you. And we have all these different things which really change what's going on in racing. How do you feel about that in comparison to the history of the sport?
Yeah, well, I think that they're looking for the best product possible. And, you know, they're willing to do whatever it takes to make, you know, NASCAR has always been about competition. It's been about parity. And, you know, if it starts, you know, like even now, you know, poor Chevy, they kind of sort of can't get out of their own way. So they're going to have to do something to balance the field a little bit more. Also, personally, I don't think you need 200 miles an hour. If you have a good product, you can have an exceptional race at 150 miles an hour. I know it's a sacrilege to talk like that, but it's all about the competition. You know, how good do the cars race together? How brave do the drivers want to be? How much of a chance they're going to take? And, you know, at Talladega, they're just sitting there, or at Daytona, waiting for the big one. You know, that's a heck of a way to race. It's very, very, I don't know. I don't think I'd want to do that. I don't think they can be all they can be if they're just waiting to know they're going to probably have to go home on a trailer. So I'm all for whatever they think is going to work better and at least give it a try. You know, what do they have to lose? They can always go back to the other way of doing things. But, you know, we'll see what happens.
Well, they're trying to bring young people into the sport, not the drivers, but, you know, the young people to see the racing, and more even racing may pique their interest and want to bring them back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of want to bring them up to speed of what they're going to be doing online with eNASCAR. I'm just a little hint. Forget I said it. But it's going to be happening a little bit in the future where kids are racing online and they can be Dale Earnhardt Jr. or Chase Elliott Jr.
Sure.
Well,
I really think that, you know, I think the growth of NASCAR is going to depend on how well they deal with social media and how well they deal with the millennials, who are a whole different breed of cat. And, you know, for the most part, that era is not automotively based like us knuckleheads were growing up. So you have to grab them somewhere where it's going to, you know, hold their interest, bring them back into the sport. But hopefully they're going to figure it out.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's been fun for the birthday party. We have a cake, and we have more stories and some bench racing to do right after the show. We want to thank Rhonda Glasnick, Walter Glasnick, the folks that own this restaurant, the North Turn Restaurant, for hosting us here. Many thanks to Homewood Suites by Hilton, the best breakfast in the world. Also, the Cree Web Design folks, Beach Boys Embroidery and Tees, hello. And also the Janet Hale Foundation. We want to thank our fill-in executive producer today, Rich Blank, Richmond. Yeah. That's right, Richmond.
That's
He's
right.
got an unusual name.
Yep.
For all the staff here, my name is Roland Villa, and for Buzz McKim, thank you for being a part of Buzz McKim's birthday.
The Legends of Racing radio show originates live from the very spot where beach racing began, Racing's North Turn Beach Bar and Grill. Join us next time for the Legends of Racing radio show with Buzz McKim.